That's it.
Okay.
So
just trying to figure out why is that worse?
I don't know. I don't know.
Do you look better naked than you do in matching tracks?
Doesn't everybody? Well, hello and welcome, everybody.
Okay.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 89 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I'm your host, Aaron Rhoda.
You don't want to get mixed up with a guy like me.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes once a week. Should be every Sunday. Sometimes it's on Monday. That could be a song, actually, by the Magnetic Fields. But that might go well. Maybe I'll email them some new lyrics. We've got a great show planned for you today. Mr. Scott Teske, founder of the Seattle Rock Orchestra, is going to be joining us shortly here in Dining Room Studios on what has been a weird weather day once again here in Seattle. It was snowing this morning, and now the sun is out, and doesn't feel as cold. Still a lot of clouds in the sky. Man, boy, I just launched right into that, didn't I? It has been so cold. It has been so cold here in the Northwest recently. I know a lot of the rest of the country is experiencing warmer than usual temperatures. We are experiencing colder than normal temperatures here. In the greater Seattle area. It's been nasty over here. We had a wall of rain, literally a wall of rain hit us earlier this week, which was terrible. If you have to work outside like I do, it's not fun working in that. And basically you spend the rest of the day just kind of shivering and just miserable because you're just soaking. You're just soaking wet the rest of the day, which totally sucks. Anyway, yeah, that was that was my week. Thank you for caring. Like I said, Scott Teske of the Seattle Rock Orchestra will be joining us shortly to talk about a bunch of stuff. Now, this is the problem with this show. As you've probably noticed, I am doing less sound drops. On this one, we've been getting a number of emails from listeners around the country, which are saying, they come across as a bit cheesy. So we are changing things up just a little bit. We're changing the format. And we really appreciate all the constructive criticism about the show. And you can email me, Aaron, at air-raid.net with your thoughts. And we've got a great email to read for you here in a little bit. We've got some new iTunes reviews to read for you, which, by the way, we have been featured on New and Noteworthy for the last 2 weeks straight in the top 20 of all comedy podcasts and in the top, 120 of all podcasts everywhere. Can you believe that? We are doing things over here. Stitcher's been going crazy. Remember to download the Stitcher app for your iPhone or Android phone or Windows phone, because it is a great app. It's like Pandora. Oh, boy. Pandora Radio for podcasts on your phone. You can stream them straight from there. And, we've been enjoying some What's Hot List exposure on that as well. Anyway, plugs aside. So this guy, Scott, came over a little bit ago. He just actually left about a half an hour ago. Had a wonderful conversation with this man. It was very, very interesting to find out how he kind of formed this whole thing. The Seattle Rock Orchestra is really great. If you live here in the Seattle area, do not miss a show with them, because they are fantastic. They cover a lot of amazing albums. I think they covered OK Computer by Radiohead. And it's a whole orchestra that's covering this stuff. And it's really, really well done. They've done Arcade Fire albums. They just did a Muse album. They've got, they're going to be, for one night, in one night, they're going to be covering all of the Beatles' Rubber Soul and Revolver albums. Can you believe that? That is going to be fantastic. And last week, was it last week? No, it was 2 weeks ago. I saw them play They were the backing orchestra for the band The Lonely Forest there at the Neptune, which was fantastic. So, really, you got to go check this out. So we got done with the show, and we were just chatting a little bit, finishing our drinks, and we got to talking, and this is where doing your research on whoever's coming over to your home for a fake radio show would come in handy, right? Talk to them just for a little bit, find out or read up on what they've done in the past, and you may find that they are friends with friends of yours. Or friends of acquaintances of yours, like people that you grew up with and people that you went to high school with. Doesn't seem like a hard thing to do, right? Well, when you're lazy, a lot of things are hard, people. Get off my back! Get off my back. Anyway, so, yeah, just found that out. We had a lot in common. Yeah, and he's a great guy. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy the shit out of this interview. Anyway, let's see here. I wanted to mention a couple things here. Let's see, before we get to the reviews and the email. Emerald City Comic Con is coming up. Let's see, starting on the 30th of this month. And it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to be there. My friend Will, who, if you've been listening for any amount of time, helped me out at the last Comic Con last year in 2011. And we are going to be around snapping pictures of people's costumes and just talking with people and doing that whole thing. So if you see us at Comic-Con this year here in Seattle, come up and say hi. Come up and say hi. We'd love to meet you. Also, I will be emceeing what is called Crackle Fest that evening. Friday evening on the 30th. My first emceeing gig. I'm a little nervous about this. So I hope you guys show up. It would be great. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's put on by our good friends in the band Kirby Crackle, the geek rock or nerd rock, if you will, band. So I hope you guys show up for that. And there's going to be a couple really great acts that open up for that. So my first emceeing gig. I'm getting a little bit nervous about that. So come to that. It's going to be at the Hard Rock Cafe on the 30th. And I don't know times too well, but I'll make sure to post that stuff on our Facebook page. So, yeah, go over to our Facebook page, like the Facebook page, and you'll get all these updates because that's where most of our updates come from. Anyway, let's get to this really nice email that I got from a listener, Sarah, out in Colorado. Let's see. She says, "Hi, Aaron. I started listening to your show a while ago and have been listening backwards. Time banditing, if you will. I just started listening to the show with Dana Gould. I know it was a while ago, but I am sorry to hear about your grandfather. What you said really struck a chord with me because I have been lucky enough to have had two wonderful people as grandparents. I have now lost them both. And I know how heartbreaking that can be. I think of them both nearly every day. I'm glad you had such a good grandfather. My condolences for your loss. Love the show, Sarah." Well, thank you so much, listener Sarah, out there in Colorado, at Colorado State University, a graduate research assistant. We've got smart people listening to this show. That's fantastic. It's good to know. That is good to know. Thank you very much. That actually, when I first read that email, brought a little bit of a tear to my eye, especially when I started writing back to her. Because it, you know, kind of brought up all these feelings again about my grandpa Earl, but yeah, thank you so much. That was wonderful. That was absolutely wonderful. I really, really appreciate the sentiment there, Sarah. And thank you so much for listening. Remember, tell your friends about us. Spread the good word of the Air Raid podcast for us, will you? Because we need help. We definitely need help out there. Also, we've got a couple new reviews to read for you really quick. And I totally wasn't ready for this once again. I thought I had everything pulled up. I thought I was ready with everything. And it's just not there. It's just not there. So let's see here. Just getting it. Do-to-do. Everybody, just, you know, talk amongst yourself. Do whatever you do there. We got this one from Curtis Hammond. He says, "I am a huge fan. Can you get the Grapes of Rad on again? Air Raid and Grapes of Rad are my favorite podcasts. It's awesome whenever you guys do an episode together. Well, thank you, sir. And I'm sure that they will be back on in the future because they are great dudes, Aaron and Ben. And I always love talking with them. So, yeah, Curtis, we will make sure to do that sometime in the future. This one is from Travel Cup. He or she says, good guests, good music, and good conversations. Gave us a nice 5-star review. Says, this podcast hasn't stopped gaining momentum in the year I have been listening. Good stuff, sir. No need for a nipple slip. Wonderful. Wonderful. You don't want to see my nipple slip anyway. All right, let's go. Thank you, guys. And you, of course, can leave us iTunes reviews. Go to the iTunes thing. Leave us a review. We love it. This is Magnetic Fields. The song is called Andrew and Drag. It's their new one. You can find it on their website at houseoftomorrow.com. So go check that out. And we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid podcast with special guest Scott Teske. See you in a moment. Welcome back to the Air Raid Podcast. Joining me here in Dining Room Studios, high atop the Greenwood neighborhood here in North Seattle, Washington, is Mr. Scott Teske. Is that how you say your last name, Scott?
That is perfect pronunciation. Thank
really?
You. Yep.
Oh, my God. Right, I'm so happy with myself. Because, okay, folks at home, I didn't even ask him before we started the show how to say his last name. I just knew how to do it because I am a professional at fake radio. So welcome
sorry,
to the Air Raid Podcast.
I got a few sniffles. You might hear me like honking on my handkerchief.
Yeah, there. When you came in, you had the handkerchief. You got everything. You're kind of old fashioned that way. I'm noticing.
You probably noticed a few clues. Yes, a little
yeah.
old fashioned.
Because I got okay. So let's do the rundown here.
All right.
So I got an email from you a little bit earlier, about what 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Before you were supposed to show up, and you said I don't have a cell phone. So I'm just going to show up right when I'm supposed to be there, and I'll just meet you downstairs.
What a,
and it
a
worked
novel
perfectly.
Concept.
Yeah, yeah.
Be,
that
yeah.
never happens. Never.
Never?
No, no. The Young Evils were on time. No, wait. No, they weren't. They called in late. Yeah. You're the only guy that's ever been on time, I think.
Cool.
Right on the button. So you don't own a cell phone?
No.
And it's by choice?
It is by choice.
Wow. Why?
Why?
Tell us
why. You know, I live with my brother. He's
he's
very dear to me. He's my best friend. Uh-huh. We get along great. He has
the older brother.
He's
or
a younger brother.
Oh, okay,
my
okay.
younger brother is my inspiration in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
He has not had a cell phone for like 3 or 4 years.
Really?
So I've witnessed that cell phone free living.
Yeah, yeah.
Works. He does just great.
Right, right.
And
so you guys got a regular old landline at home then. Or do you even have a telephone?
I don't even have a telephone.
Are you serious?
No.
Get out of town.
No telephone.
No shit. So you just do what? Skype and
yeah.
and
Skype and Google Voice.
Really?
It works great.
No shit.
Pay like $5 every 3 months for phone service. It's awesome.
Wow.
For a working musician?
Yeah, yeah.
Wonderful.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Now I'm even more surprised that I got a hold of you so quickly and set this thing up because this was kind of like last minute for me anyway, you know, setting this interview up. So now I'm super, super surprised because you don't even own a phone.
Look, I don't know what to say.
I'm dumbfounded. So let's see. Let's explain what you do, what you're doing here. Scott is the founder of the Seattle Rock Orchestra, which I had the pleasure of seeing a couple weekends ago. They played with the orchestra, a stripped-down version of the orchestra, played with the band Lonely Forest at the Neptune Theater, and it was fantastic. And after I saw that, because that was the first time I had seen the orchestra play with the band, I was like, I gotta talk to somebody from this thing.
Cool,
because it was amazing. And these are all like volunteer people too, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, very talented, dedicated volunteers.
Yeah. So let's get into this a little bit, Scott. Yeah. How did you come up with this idea? Well, first of all, let's go into your background. So sure. you are a professional musician. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't do anything but music, so I think by default that makes me a professional.
Yeah, right. You do it for your job.
Yeah.
Right? So how did you get started with music? What was the impetus to getting you into playing? What, you play mainly bass, right?
I am a bassist. Yes.
Okay.
Electric so bass and also stand-up bass. And I actually consider...
Do you call it double bass?
Double bass is what I prefer to call it. Yes. I don't even know why I just called it stand-up bass.
That's not a professional musician term right there.
I mean, there's so many names for it. You can call it the bass fiddle, the what you know.
We're not in the South.
Coming from a classical background, they often call it the double bass.
Yes,
so that's what I like to call it.
Yeah.
That's my primary instrument, and then I like to rock out on the electric bass every so often too.
Yeah. So what got you into this?
I started playing cello in elementary school orchestra.
Was that like a forced thing? Did your parents make you do that or what?
No. It's just kind of something that everybody does when they're in fifth grade, and I just kept at it.
I think I played recorder.
I did some recorder.
Did you?
Yeah, I think I played it in fourth grade though.
Maybe that's what. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Shoreline, not too far from
here. Yeah. I was over on the Kitsap Peninsula, and we had, you know, everybody. I guess this is totally normal. Like every elementary school, you play a recorder, right? Mm-hmm. And then they have like the concert or something like that. Well, I was so ADD as a kid, like as you can tell right now, because I'm taking us off onto this tangent. I didn't really learn how to do the recorder. Mm-hmm. So in the concert, when we were all playing, I was just moving my fingers.
Mimed?
Yeah, I just mimed the recorder. And when the concert was done, my dad came up to me and was like, "You weren't playing a single note, were you?" I guess it was pretty obvious. I was pretty bad at miming at that age. So yeah. But I always, that's a pretty normal thing, doing a recorder. But you were playing cello.
Yeah. Can I tell you a professional trade secret?
What?
Yeah. Professional musicians fake all the time too.
No way.
Oh yeah, especially in classical music.
I've always wondered that. Because there's so many people around. Like if they forgot like what the
if you get fatigued, if you're playing like an opera that's 4 hours long, you don't have the stamina to play for 4 hours.
Right. You can't keep your arm, especially like violin players or something like that. Yeah. You can't keep your arm up all that time.
Yeah, or if it's just the composer's just written something that's just ridiculous.
Right.
It's like not even really possible. You just kind of go through the motions a little bit. So it's don't tell anybody I spread the secret here.
Oh my God, that's crazy. That blows my mind.
Yeah, so
but it's we're not talking about like a an Ashley Simpson kind of thing where they play a backing
oh my
track
gosh.
Or something.
I saw that
on
when
SNL?
It happened live.
Yeah,
and
I
it
did
was,
too.
I was amazed and horrified.
I will always remember that little like jig that she did when she finally like it hit her what was going on.
Yeah.
She did that little jig and like went sideways off the stage like a cartoon character.
It was bizarre.
Yeah, totally. But we're not talking about like something like that, right?
No, I'm talking like Wagner.
Well, I know. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah. Not type of music, but like you guys don't have like a backing track playing to the symphony.
I don't think I've ever played in a symphony with a backing track.
Yeah. What happened? Okay, so has this ever happened in like a symphony that you've been playing with or orchestra that you've been playing with, uh-huh, where a bunch of people forgot the same line and so it just like gets a lot quieter or something? Because what happens if like a bunch of people forget or they get tired and fatigued?
Well, you know, when there's when it's really exposed and when it's just like your section or you playing, uh-huh, you got to know your stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But if there's 50 people that are everybody's doing, it's just cacophony,
uh-huh,
you know, some they're not really going to notice if you just kind of wing it a little bit.
But. Does the conductor know?
Oh, they know.
They know. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just want to make sure.
Conductors know everything. they're omniscient. They just see and hear. They just know. They just read your brain waves.
They look so, they're so intimidating, right?
Most.
Most of them are?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. The younger, older conductors are. I think it's kind of a tradition of the past. But younger conductors are, they're fun and they're hip and...
They're a little loose.
They're a little looser. Yeah, yeah. They're fun. Yeah.
They like playing Radiohead.
Yes.
With a full orchestra.
Yeah.
We'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. So okay, so let's get back to you a little bit here.
Okay.
You started playing cello,
mm-hmm,
in fifth grade.
Yeah.
And did you like it?
I did like it.
Yeah. Wasn't forced on you, nothing like that.
No. I actually really appreciate the approach my parents took with me of, mm-hmm, not really being too hard on me about practicing.
Right, right.
They kind of just let me do it.
Yeah.
And I think that...
Did they let you pick an instrument too?
Actually, cello was kind of picked for me.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know why, when you're in elementary school, people think orchestra's not as cool as band. It's not true, but there's just this kind of this weird myth. And so if you... I think you could do like three choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I picked drums. Number one, clarinet, buddy. Number two, and cello, mm-hmm, number three. And if you had any preference for a string instrument whatsoever, you immediately got put into orchestra.
Really?
Yeah. And so I started playing the cello.
Uh-huh.
6 months later, my orchestra teacher pulls me aside and she says, Scott, I want you to check this out. She takes me to the back of the room,
uh-huh,
opens up this big closet, and like the door like creaks open.
Yeah.
She says, check this out. And there was the double bass. Said, I think you might like this one.
How tall are you at this point? Because that thing probably towered. Well, it must have been like a junior scale.
It was a junior size.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Because those things are huge.
They're huge.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow.
And so
did it just blow you away, like looking at this ginormous instrument?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. Uh-huh. I started playing it, and I never looked back.
So this is still fifth grade.
This is still fifth grade.
Wow.
Yeah, we have not progress very far through my history. We're kind of stuck.
This story is really slow.
Yeah. Let's pick it up.
Okay, so you start playing double bass for the what school is this? Some elementary school.
I went
up
to
Shoreline?
Syrie Elementary School.
Okay. So you're playing for an elementary school orchestra.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool. And you just loved it. Were your parents musical?
Not really.
No?
Yeah,
they listen to a lot of music at least, though.
They, you know, they love the Beatles, the, mm-hmm, Stones. Yeah, we listen to the oldies radio.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, not really any instrumental prowess.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's in the family, a couple generations back.
Okay, okay. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of same story with my family too. Like we never, you know, my parents never played a lot of music, but, you know, mm-hmm, whenever we're in the car or going somewhere or something like that, yeah, the oldies station, I think it was what was it, 97.3
KBSG? It is now Cairo.
Cairo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, it was, you know, always listening to the Turtles and, you know, every different version of House of the Rising Sun that you could hear.
There's,
you know,
a lot.
Like, oh, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was kind of same story for me. And then you know, in the 90s when every kid wanted a guitar,
mm-hmm,
you know, I got a guitar. Yeah. So, okay. Fifth grade. What year are we talking about here?
What year was I in fifth grade?
Yeah, yeah.
Don't make me do the math.
Do the math on that one. You're a musician, not a math major. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so.
Let's say mid-90s.
Mid-90s? Okay, okay. So, like, the grunge era was just starting. Around that time,
oh, yeah,
too, or, you know, probably full bore mid 90s, 95 or something.
You know what? Like I remember being like 13 and, mm-hmm. and hearing that Kurt Cobain died. So I was right in that pivotal era of the development in my life. Where
were you ever into that? Where you, did you get into that kind of music too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of after Kurt died, though.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of my big, like, you know, brought it on my radar. I was like, oh, what's this about?
Yeah. 14 years old, the teen angst starts at that, at right about age.
Everybody gets the angst.
So were you listening, were you, even at that age, were you listening and enjoying, like, orchestral music?
You know, I think this happens for a lot of kids. I think it actually came later. I was more into the rock and roll,
mm-hmm.
into what's happening in popular music. And just through continuing to study my instrument, you know, I really liked playing it, but I didn't listen to a whole lot of classical records. But the more you learn about classical music and you learn that it's just popular music that's really old.
Totally.
But it's cool stuff. It's great. And when you get into it and learn about the composers, learn about the pieces and how it fits into the time period, uh-huh. and how it was really groundbreaking and phenomenal then.
Yeah.
And people are going crazy over it, just as I was going crazy over Nirvana.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can really start to relate to it and appreciate it.
So it's almost like a really educational and period specific LARPing.
I don't know if I know what that word means.
That sounds live action role playing. You ever seen the guys in the park that like dress up in chainmail and attack each other?
Yes.
Yes.
When I was at UW, I don't know if you heard about these guys, the Vampire Club.
I did.
That hangs out in the parking lot, in the parking garage.
Yeah.
I saw that. Yeah.
They attack people or what?
I know. They just kind
of... Or just like try to talk people into like being part of their group?
I don't think they ever talked to me or I saw them talking with anybody else that wasn't in full makeup and had a cape on.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they wear fangs?
Mm-hmm.
Probably.
I mostly remember the capes. Fantastic capes. And they would run around and they would billow behind them.
And these are college-age students.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess I can see LARPing, right? Mm-hmm. The whole... Because that role-playing stuff kind of follows people, like Dungeons & Dragons, up into, you know, your mid-30s, where some of my friends are and still enjoy playing D&D. From time to time.
Hey, if you love it, I say go for it.
But the vampire thing, man, I just don't get. Like walking around, hanging out in a garage at the UW, wearing capes.
What, Aaron? Maybe they are ahead of their time because
they could be.
Everything these days is vampires everywhere.
No, it's zombies now.
Is it zombies?
I think the vampire thing is kind of done.
Kind of over.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess once part two of that Twilight movie comes out, then it'll probably be back on.
Or that's just it. That's the last one.
Yeah. We just need to get over this last hump as society, get done with the Twilight saga,
mm-hmm.
and then we can just move on. Everybody can just move on from this period in Earth's history because it's just been such a dark spot. Have you seen those movies, by the way?
I saw the first one.
So bad.
Terrible.
So bad. I mean, the acting was terrible. The plot was bad. I mean, everything about that movie was just horrible. And my wife is super into it.
The movie?
Yeah. So we've had to go to each one. And I was in, we went to, have you ever been to Cinnabar up in Mountain Lake Terrace?
Mm-mm.
It's great because you can drink and order food in there and stuff
like that. I would think drinking while watching that movie would be helpful.
It was so helpful. I ordered like 4 beers at the beginning because I knew that it was just going to be long. And it was just like, it was all women in there, you know, with their friends and stuff. And here I am, the solo husband that got
way
dragged
to be supportive.
To this thing with my wife. Yeah. It's like a, you know, it's like a impromptu date night, right? And so I remember we're sitting there and there's this one point, and spoiler alert, the girl gives birth to some like hybrid vampire baby, right? That's going to kill her or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So the main vampire like goes and has to, cause she's going to die if she gives birth to this mm-hmm. demon child. And so he like bites her down there. Maybe it was in her thigh. I don't know. They don't show it.
Okay.
But he bites her down there to turn her into a vampire. I don't fucking know. But it turns her into a vampire, I think, to save her life.
So that she can live through the birth.
Right, right. Well, there's also this thing, because there's like those two guys that are like the same girl, right? One's a werewolf, one's the vampire. Yeah, this other guy, he imprints, he falls in love with or whatever, falls in love with the newborn baby. And I, at that point, I yelled out in the middle of the theater. I was like,
what did you yell?
God damn it. Like that. Got a lot of laughs. Got a lot of laughs around, sitting around me. So that was good. But I mean, I don't know what the deal is with the vampire stuff, because it hasn't been very good.
No,
I've even seen like a couple episodes of that True Blood show, and it's not very good.
It's kind of going downhill.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, wow.
I think you're right. Zombies is the new thing.
Yeah, I'm way into zombies.
Yeah, I've just been watching The Walking Dead.
Ooh.
It's pretty awesome.
You watching season 2?
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen any of that yet.
It's good.
I really want to. Yeah. So no spoilers.
No
spoilers on that. We'll only spoil Twilight for everybody who hasn't seen it yet. Well, let's take a quick musical break. And when we come back, we will leave this tangent behind us, and we will talk more with Scott Teske. Teske.
Yes. That's
right. See? Got it right twice. And we'll talk more with Scott about how this whole the orchestra got started, because he ended up going to college for music and everything like that, and then forming this awesome thing. So let's do that.
Okay, sounds good.
We're gonna go with our second musical break here. I Think I Need a New Heart by of course the Magnetic Fields, who are going to be playing at the Neptune on the 19th and 20th. So get your tickets now. So for those of you keeping track when this show goes up, that is tomorrow night and Tuesday night, Monday and Tuesday, 2012. If you're listening to this show in 2014, it's too late. So get your tickets now. This is I Think I Need a New Heart by the Magnetic Fields, and we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. That was I Think I Need a New Heart by the Magnetic Fields, who are coming to Seattle Monday and Tuesday, the 19th and 20th. This week to the Neptune Theater. So get your tickets now, because it will most definitely sell out. I'm making that prediction right now, looking into my crystal ball full of bourbon. Okay. during break, we were talking about this. We don't have to say the name of it either, but you guys got kind of sponsored by this brewing company down in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and they just sent how many cases of beer to your place?
29.
29 cases of beer to your house, so you guys could drink it during rehearsals.
Right.
That's amazing.
Yeah, for the whole season. So every rehearsal we have, pull a case out.
That's awesome. Okay, so when we left for that musical break, we were talking about zombies and vampires. Now we're back. We want to get back to Mr. Scott Teskey. And how, okay, so when we were talking about your childhood, let's see, you find the double bass at, what, age 13 or something like that? Or 12, I guess?
Yeah.
In fifth grade? Or 11?
12. Let's say 12.
Let's say 12? Okay, we'll go with that. Fall in love with this thing, this instrument, and start pursuing it and learning more about it as the years go by. And let's just skip all the grade school, all the high school.
Sounds
you get
real
into
good.
College.
Yeah, let's talk. Well, sure.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk. Nobody wants to relive their high school experience anyway, right? Yeah. By the way, I had this crazy dream the other night.
Was I in it?
No, you weren't. But I was back in high school, and it was like one of those like show up to high school naked dreams.
Yeah.
Except I had on like matching sweatpants and sweatshirt, and it was even worse. It was worse than being naked. It's terrible. Anyway, that's it.
Okay.
So.
Just trying to think out why is that worse?
I don't know.
Right, do you look better naked than you do in matching tracksuit?
Doesn't everybody? It wasn't a tracksuit though. It was sweatpants.
Sweatpants.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like gray sweatpants
and like a
Russell Athletic
sweatshirt.
Oh,
yeah, I'd rather
you
be
know?
Naked.
Oversized sweatshirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible. Terrible stuff. See, now you realize.
Now I get it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just needed a visual.
Right. Okay, so you get to college. Do you know that this is what you want to do? Like, music is it?
Oh, I knew music. I knew I wanted to do music. I didn't know how that would manifest.
Uh-huh.
And I, through college, I was kind of told, like, this is the one way that you are going to be a professional musician.
Right.
And that's if you practice your butt off and you take auditions and you get into a major symphony. That's the only living wage you'll ever be able to get as a bass player.
Yeah.
And I think it was is good intentioned, but I didn't quite buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, well, every time there's an audition for one of these spots in a symphony, 400 people show up. You got to be better than 400 of the best people in the country.
Right.
So those odds, I mean, I wanted to be good and I hope I'm an okay bass player. But that's the odds just weren't favorable. No way. I don't know how I got it in my mind, but I just thought, you know, there's just too many people trying to do the same thing.
Right.
I need to kind of trailblaze and figure out something that nobody else has done.
Okay.
Find my own path. And that's how I'm going to make my living and make my way, make my name is... doing something totally new.
Okay. So is that the impetus to where you kind of came up with the Seattle Rock Orchestra? Or
I think I kind of had that in the back of my mind.
Right.
And I just chose not to take that path.
Okay.
And, you know, I had been playing in rock bands off and on through college you know, loved classical, loved rock and roll. And then eventually I said... maybe I need to put these two together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that would be a cool thing. And there we are.
Really? So was that like towards the end of your college
I think
career?
I was, let's see, well, the orchestra started in 2008. So
okay.
This is a couple years after college.
Okay.
Where
okay.
I was playing in a band and, you know, I was the bass player, which is great. But I'm more of a... I'll say it, I'm just kind of a leader, and it's kind of hard to be in a band where you're just kind of the wallflower in the background.
Right.
And so I really wanted to start my own project where I could kind of be the musical director.
Right.
But I kind of did an evaluation of my skills. I'm not a great singer or much of a songwriter, but I know this kind of classical world. And I can do the arranging and the contracting of players. And so I just said, well, this is something that I could do with the skills that I have and be able to be kind of that front man.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I came up with, was the rock orchestra.
Really?
Yeah.
So what was the next step then? So you come up with this idea, and how are you getting people on board? for something like this. I mean, it's a very novel idea too. So I imagine people, like, once they hear it, mm-hmm. especially like people kind of our age, we're a couple years apart, but I think people, you know, in our generation would jump at that. Even music majors, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it was mostly just, I just enlisted anyone that I'd come in contact with mm-hmm. in 10 years of freelance playing since I was in high school. So there's people in the orchestra that I went to high school with. There's people in the orchestra I went to college with that I did gigs with after college as I was freelancing and just doing gigs for money. So anyone that I had ever met that was in my network, I just said, come play with us. And so it started small. Mm-hmm. And I think because it is...
And you're just practicing at this point, just getting a bunch of people together in a living room and...
Oh, and we weren't even practicing.
Oh,
we,
right.
I think what really...
Just drinking?
No, we didn't drink at that point. It was just in my living room. And we had to get a gig.
Uh-huh.
Once we had a gig,
yeah.
then we kind of get our act together.
Right,
we need to find some people. We need to schedule some rehearsals.
Uh-huh.
So we just did a small gig with a friend of mine.
Where was that at?
At the High Dive in Fremont.
Oh, really?
With my friend Ian Bell.
Okay.
He's got a kind of a indie folk duo called the Black Swedes. Great group, great songwriter.
Black Swedes, I've never even heard of them.
We were in a band
uh-huh.
for a couple of years together.
So how many orchestral people did you have in that?
13.
13
was the first show.
Okay.
And then I think the next show was like 15.
God, that's a big group for that stage too.
It is. It was pretty packed.
Yeah.
And then the show after that, it was 30 people.
Wow.
And then after that, it was 50. So we just kept upping the ante.
Yeah.
As we kind of got more buzz and better shows.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just kind of snowballed.
I would imagine that it would get pretty good because everybody, like we played back in a band that I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
We played with a string section sometimes, and we recorded with them and stuff. And it was amazing. Like the sound that adds mm-hmm. to like a rock band, or even especially like a indie rock band or a folk rock kind of, you know, style adds a lot to the background. One thing, this is a question that I thought of last night. I just cut myself off. Was when the experience of me recording with a string section mm-hmm. way back when, like, almost brought a tear to my eye. Have you ever noticed that with some of the musicians that
Tears?
You guys play with? Yeah. Like, somebody's so happy to hear that sound.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they get really emotional.
It's a really cool dynamic and relationship because the bands and artists we work with
mm-hmm.
that don't have any kind of this classical training or orchestral experience,
mm-hmm.
they are so delighted to have us involved. They are just blown away.
Plus because they don't have to really teach you the parts, right? You guys uh-huh. have the knowledge to go in and like
just listen and figure
it out. Listen and figure it out. Yeah.
But on the flip side,
uh-huh.
our classical players, they have this incredible opportunity to meet and perform with bands that they love.
Right, right.
And so it's this really cool mutually beneficial dynamic
uh-huh, uh-huh.
where everybody's just kind of in awe and really happy to be there and so stoked.
That is so cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Yeah. It's almost bringing a tear. I'm getting emotional.
You getting
right
a little
now.
Tear?
I am. It's a great thing. And it is a great feeling for a musician, too, to hear their songs played on such a large scale like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I really think it's cool. So let's go into so you come up with this idea, the group is exponentially growing
mm-hmm.
with each gig that you're doing.
Yeah.
And so what are some of the bands that you guys then started playing with? I mean, it seems like a relatively, I guess you said that you started in 2008, so technically speaking it wasn't that quick of a rise in town, but I would imagine that you guys got some, you know, the ball started rolling pretty quick after the few or a couple of the first shows, right?
It's probably about a year.
About a year? That's pretty quick, right?
Yeah,
In
sure.
the grand scheme of things, yeah. Yeah. So you started playing with, name some of the bands that you guys were playing with at the time then.
We played, which did a show, a couple shows with Grand Hallway, who are an awesome band.
Mm-hmm. Tomo was just on this show.
Oh, so, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Super nice guy.
What does he like to drink?
I think we had Jameson.
Yeah.
Maybe he just had water. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
He's getting married.
He is.
That's cool.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyways.
Congratulations, Tomo.
Yeah.
If you're listening.
And let's see, we did some work with a band called XOXO.
Right, yeah.
And it was really when we, I think what really kind of was the spark that ignited the fireball or whatever.
Yeah.
Is we did this tribute to Arcade Fire.
Yes.
And that was our first
show. And
that
was at the Neptune too, right?
That was at the Fremont Abbey.
Oh, was that at, that was at Fremont Abbey? Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was the first show where it was our show. Mm-hmm. We weren't just backing somebody up.
Right. It was just you guys.
It was us
and
doing our thing.
What's the number of people in the orchestra at this point?
I think this was 50 pieces.
That was 50?
Yeah. Okay. We took up half of the room.
Right.
It was the orchestra took up half, and then the other half was the audience.
Yeah.
It was magical.
And you even had accordion and everything.
We did have accordion.
Yeah.
Yeah. The lovely Shenandoah Davis was our accordion and glockenspiel and piano player.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a, you guys played to a packed room.
Mm-hmm.
Half packed by you guys, the other half packed by onlookers. Yeah. It was great. And you can go and check this out on YouTube too. There's a bunch of videos of that there. Okay, so that kind of started the fire then.
Mm-hmm.
Like actually covering a whole album
of
a very popular indie band.
Yeah, and I think more importantly, it gave us our own identity.
Right. Yeah.
So we've been doing these tributes ever since.
Uh huh.
We've done.
What year did you guys do the Arcade Fire thing?
Oh, that was 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's been a while.
Yeah, and then since then, you guys have done Radiohead.
We've done Radiohead. We've done Queen, David Bowie, Stevie Wonder.
Stevie Wonder too. Like you guys had guest singers come on and sing the tunes with you guys.
We have a guest singers every show.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Anytime there's vocal work, we enlist singers from local bands in the community.
Okay. Gotcha.
And we have a really excellent kind of community of people we draw from that have. I mean, we're always seeking out new vocal talent, but there's you know some people we just really love to work with, like Zach Davidson from Vendetta Red, who's playing tonight at the Crocodile.
Yes. Which you'll have to jump in your hot tub time machines to go to because this episode doesn't air until tomorrow. And Alan Stone, you guys have had. That was for Stevie Wonder, right?
He did our Stevie Wonder and our Queen show.
Oh, really? Okay.
And then we backed him up at the Neptune in January
on
his original stuff. Yeah. And that was an incredible. We did two shows with him.
Well, he has just gone from nothing to like stardom.
Oh, amazing.
So quickly.
Yeah.
Too, and that must have been a lot of fun because I'll bet that show was sold out.
I think both were.
Yeah.
And because he's a comet on his path, I hope he'll work with us again, but he's going places.
Yeah. Alan, if you're listening, I hope you work with me again too. He was supposed to be on this show quite a while ago. We won't get into that though. But it's just been really cool kind of seeing what you guys are doing. Let's see, what has been your favorite so far? What's been the favorite show that you guys have done?
Oh, I don't even, everyone is so much fun.
Uh-huh.
They're just when you're on stage at the Moor and you've got 70 people on stage and it's just this big production. It's just bliss every time.
Uh-huh.
We just did Muse in
February.
Right. Yeah. And it's just amazing 2 hours to be on stage in the middle of that gigantic ensemble and just rocking out.
Yeah.
It's just.
And where was that at?
That was at the Moor.
That was at the Moor?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that is a big, that's a legit theater.
Oh, it's so great.
Yeah. Yeah,
beautiful.
So, does it blow your mind that this thing has blown up this much? And did it take like you kind of pinching yourself to realize that this was happening? Because it seems like it started off as this idea in your mind, when you were in college and you wanted to do something different? Did you ever foresee it being what it is today?
I think I did. Yeah. I mean, when I started it, I didn't want it to be a 13-piece ensemble. Mm-hmm. I think the vision that I had has been realized.
Right, right.
And we're there now finally after a couple years of plugging away.
Right, right.
So it's been great. The successes we've had have I'm so grateful, and it's been incredible the opportunities we've been given.
Uh-huh.
This is definitely what I set out to do.
Yeah, yeah. So obviously this has become kind of a job, right?
Mm-hmm.
In itself.
Yep.
Does it pay the bills? If you don't mind me asking.
One of these days.
One of these days it will. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you pay your musicians?
Some of them. Some of the people that are just super involved that are,
Yeah. But for the most part, like we said in the beginning, it is a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
It's a volunteer group.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
It's been really great. We've been growing a lot. We're actually becoming a nonprofit organization.
Really?
So it used to just be kind of me on my computer and being an email junkie.
Yeah.
And now we have this incredible staff of people.
Uh-huh.
And we're applying for nonprofit status, and we've been developing all these education programs. We're doing a summer camp this summer, and we're doing these in-school visits, and we're opening up our sound checks at the Moore Theater for students to come by and see what we do.
And check it out, to see the behind-the-scenes kind of thing.
Behind-the-scenes.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
So we're really growing into an arts organization.
I'm going to have to talk to you about that off-air. Does creating a nonprofit organization, has that been kind of a headache? Like, I imagine there's got to be just a ton of paperwork for you guys to do. But if you got a whole group that's working on that stuff, maybe that's a little bit less than a...
Like I said, we have wonderful people behind the scenes. And considering that I'm not so good with that stuff, I'm...
Well, we found out earlier you're not very good with math, so...
so I'm incredibly grateful to our volunteers.
Yeah, staff. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great, man. That's great. So what do we got? What do we got coming up? Let's pimp your wares here.
Well, we've got four shows remaining in our season here until we take a summer hiatus, and then we're back for more.
Right.
We are accompanying a children's artist who has a character called Gustafur Yellowgold, who is a drop of sunbeam. From the sun.
Really?
Who comes to Earth and has wild psychedelic adventures.
That is trippy.
And the music's really great. It's you'd like it. It's kind of indie rockish.
Uh-huh.
But also,
who is it? Is it? It's not Chris Ballou. He's got the Casper baby pants.
I don't remember the guy's name that does it. His name's Morgan something. But the character's Christopher Yellowgold, and he does. And we're going to be performing at Town Hall March 24th, and there'll be animations behind us.
Oh,
it'll be really
cool.
It's a noon show, and I think it's really cheap. It's like $5.
Wow, well, we may have to bring the kiddo to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And April 6th, we're back at Town Hall. We're collaborating with seven slam poets doing their original poetry. They're donating their poetry to us to create into some songs.
Yeah, you're basically custom making these songs to go around the poetry.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so somebody's going to be reading the poetry and you guys are going to be playing the music behind it? Is that how that's going to work?
There's going to be some people reading poetry with music behind it.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be some sung poetry with music behind it.
Okay.
And so this is a really exciting opportunity for us because it's all original music.
Yeah.
Which we don't often do.
Right.
Which
we
are intending to do more of.
So does this freak you out a little bit?
It's a little scary.
This got to be stressful.
It's a little scary.
Yeah.
But it's going to be really fun.
Cool, cool. And then what's this last one coming up?
We're doing The Beatles, Rubber Soul, and Revolver.
Yes.
May 12th and 13th at the Moore Theater.
I'm so getting tickets to that.
And that's going to be just a lot of fun.
That is going to be awesome. Two great albums to cover. And to be done by a whole orchestra is going to be really, really cool.
Yeah.
Have you guys started practicing for that yet?
No.
How much of this stuff do you practice for at a time, I guess?
We start practicing a couple weeks before the show.
Just a couple weeks?
And we do it pretty intensively.
Wow. Well, yeah, I would imagine. And how does everybody's schedule work out? Has that been a problem in the past? Like, because these volunteer musicians come in, I imagine that some of them are probably in the Seattle Orchestra, right?
In the Seattle Symphony?
Seattle Symphony, yeah.
Oh, they're not. A lot of them are freelancers.
Okay.
And they do take gigs.
College students and
music teachers. Yeah. But I think if they were in the Seattle Symphony, they'd be getting paid too much to work with us.
those poor bastards. Yeah. They can never have any fun.
But we hope to get there.
Yeah.
To be able to pay. But I think it's just going to take some time to get the get some donors and sponsors.
Yeah,
and
well, I think you're on your way, man. That's what it sounds like, and it's really great. So all of the people listening here in Seattle, or if you're we've got a lot of listeners down in Oregon too. Just come on up, check it out, because most of these they're on weekends. This one, Seattle Rock Orchestra performs the Beatles, is Saturday May 12th and the 13th. And that's gonna be rad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really looking forward to that. Those are two of my top two favorite albums of all time. So I'm definitely gonna be at that one.
Cool.
And maybe possibly at the Sunbeam, whatever.
Gustafur Yellow Gold. May 24th at Town Hall.
All right. That sounds good. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for coming and joining.
Been a great pleasure.
Me here in Dining Room Studios and drinking quite a bit of bourbon.
Not too much.
That last pour was quite a lot. You didn't hang back on that.
I poured it, but I'm not going to drink it all.
No, it's been a real pleasure talking with you, man, and the best of luck in the future for the Seattle Rock Orchestra. Can only see bright things coming your way. Yeah, and thank you all for listening this week. We're going to go out today with Papa Was a Rodeo by the Magnetic Fields, who will be in town on Monday the 19th and Tuesday the 20th playing at the Neptune Theater. So remember to go and check that out, because these guys are great. Let's see. Should we plug their website? Yeah. Thehouseoftomorrow.com or houseoftomorrow.com. Go and check that out. These guys are weirdos. Anyway. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been episode 89 of the Air Raid Podcast. And, thanks for all the reviews and everything like that. Please remember, go to iTunes, review, rate the show. Only takes a few seconds of your time, and we really, really appreciate it, because it continues to help us get great guests like Scott Teske on the show. So go and do that. We really appreciate it. All right, this is Papa Was a Rodeo by Magnetic Fields, and we will see you next week. Papa was a rodeo, Mama was a rock and roll band. I could play guitar and rope a steer before I learned to stand. Home was anywhere with diesel gas, love was a trucker's hand. Never stuck around long enough for a one-night stand. Guitar.
stuck around long.